Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. My name is Curtis. I am just your resident Spike. My co-host, well, he's kind of a Spike. He did play Magic the Gathering this week. Dustin, Dustin, say hello.
What?
Hello.
And the guy saying what, exclaiming out of turn. That's our producer and MTG noob, Cameron. Cameron, how are you, sir?
I am, like, mystified. Dustin, you actually, you played Magic?
Okay, so here's, let me just paint the picture. And by the way, there's no way RF&M is nearly as interesting as Dustin's was. I get off work Friday.
Always.
And I get a text message from Dustin.
Yeah.
And usually when he texts me to get a card or see if I have a card, it's to, you know, he's selling cards, he's trading, you know, he knows someone that's looking for something, whatever. And it says, do you have any Shadowborn Apostles?
Yes.
And I said, yes, I do. And I didn't ask why.
No. Tell him what you really said. Tell him what you really said. You said, what is that card?
Cameron, do you know what Shadowborn Apostle is?
I was actually just looking that up. What is it?
It's an M14 card. And I believe it's a 1/1 for one mana.
It is.
And you can play any number of them in your deck that you so choose.
That card. Yes, yes, yes. Okay.
And you can sacrifice six of them
at once.
To get a demon. So, mana. Dustin, how many were in your deck?
I believe I had 24 or 26 of them in my deck.
Yes.
You would, dude.
Well, okay. So the thing is, it's... Okay, first off, they're humans, right? So they work with Zathrid Necromancer. Right? So if you sacrifice six of them, you get six zombies. So it sounds good on paper. Moving on, when you sacrifice them, you can get any demon, right? And we have, like, Sire of Insanity, Lord of the Void, we have Shadowborn Demon. I mean, they all have their own little perks here and there, so you just throw, like, one of each of those. So you got five demons in there, and when you need one, you just go get them.
So... It was a brew, and you know what? I totally respect that. I do. Dustin and I had a mutual friend that very much does not care for brews, right?
Indeed.
But how did it go? First of all, you got paired against Mono Black. Was it once or twice?
I think it was twice. Well, the first one was more just pack rats more than it was Mono Black. I don't know if it was Mono Black, but it was just pack rats, and like whatever.
Sure.
That one, I didn't last as long as I did in the other matchup. The other matchup... went forever. I mean, we finished game one when everybody else was already done. It was really bad, right? But, so I had the Shadowborn Apostles. I had, you know, some Necromancers. I was getting some tokens here and there. But they were all dying so quick, I never had six at once, right?
Mm-hmm.
The problem is he also had Desecration Demon out, and I had to keep sacrificing something. And when I was almost out, like... I top deck Immortal Servitude when he would have killed me, and I get all these Shadowborn Apostles back. It was hilarious. And then I was able to use, you know, obviously the ability to go fetch for demons, but it was way too late.
All the listeners want to know.
How many counters were on that Desecration Demon?
What's your demon package looked like in your deck? What demons could we choose from?
So it was Sire Insanity, and there was an extra three of him in the sideboard for control decks. Obviously, right?
Mm-hmm.
We had two Shadowborn Demons because they destroy target non-demon creature. We have Abhorrent Overlord, which gives you harpies for the amount of devotion you have to black, which gives me more things to sacrifice to Desecration Demon, obviously. And then the last one was a single Lord of the Void.
So... Dustin and I actually got paired up in the last round, and I could see that he was frustrated with his deck, not because it wasn't winning or losing or whatever, but because it was taking too long, and he wanted to trade. Right?
You know, awesome. I miss Naya Blitz, okay? Because not only could I win in, like, three turns, then I could trade, and I get, you know, winnings for store credit, right? It was like... Heaven on earth, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. So there's Dustin's F&M. Cameron, talk to me about yours, man.
Yeah, so I played standard blue-white this time. Very similar to the deck that's I think everybody's playing right now with blue-white. So
I think you mentioned it, like Sphinx's Revelation, Detention Sphere, Supreme Verdicts. Very, very, very basic. I went 2-3, and I tied it in a round, or drew, or whatever you call that.
So you went 2-3-1.
2-3-1. And the one is probably the thing that really upset me the most, because it was, I was in the game, and I'm sure everybody's been in this situation. I was in control of the board. I was doing very, very well. But I was playing against a guy who was very new to Magic, more new than I was, and would take 3 to 4 minutes per turn. It just, I mean, it drove me insane, where, like, I would have won the match, but because he played so slowly, I wasn't able to advance.
You ran out of time.
I did, yeah. And that's something I really like about Magic Online, is that you both have 30 minutes at the clock, or what is it, 25 minutes at the for your timer.
Right.
And like, I get that amount of time, he gets that amount of time. And that just really upset me, dude. I don't know, have you ever run into that, or like where somebody's like I don't know if he's being purposefully slow or what.
There's people out there that do it on purpose, and if they can prove that you're doing it on purpose in tournament formats, you can actually get game losses, or you can get banned for a season or so on. So, that being said, a lot of people, especially new people, do have to read the cards, not to mention they got to think about what they're playing. They're got to think about what you have, because if they don't know the cards, they need to know what your cards do, too. We've all been there, and it's really, it is annoying, but, you know, you can't say new players can't play, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and honestly, with those situations, I use my gut. If I'm at a Grand Prix or a Star City, I'm a little bit more forceful with the clock. I also try and make it to where I'm playing a deck that I can play at a really quick pace, right? Honestly, and I mean, Dustin's watched me play. I tend to play pretty quickly. But I, you know, I play these decks that take forever. And I think Blue-White right now is a deck that can drag out a match, whether you mean to or not, right?
Sure. Yeah.
Because you're waiting to draw the Elspeth, and it just takes forever for you to get there, right? Or you're chaining Sphinx's Revelations to find your answer. I will tell you, though, sometimes if it's a player that I know they know what they're doing and they are intentionally taking their time, I will mention something.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of have to be forceful with that kind of stuff, and it's obnoxious that you have to do it versus Magic Online, where it's kind of handled for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Right, but...
I need, yeah, like, one
I,
of those...
I feel your pain.
Those chess clocks where... My turn's over, tap it, it's his turn, he has a countdown. Right. That would be really awesome.
Right.
Well, I also hate when people, you know, because I'll have a turn or two that I'll go into the tank, and they get really impatient with me, and that really bugs me. I had a situation like this. The guy was, you know, a really nice guy, but I was playing against Mono Red, and he instepped, magma jetted me or something, and I was making a decision whether or not to last breath my own Mutavault. Okay.
Is this the guy that you were playing when you were sitting next to me, and he kept trying to let his items on the stack happen before you were thinking about it?
Yeah, he would say that. He would say stuff like, he's like, on the stack, and I say, hold on, I don't know if I have a response. And he's like, well, does it resolve? And it was like, well, I'm doing some math right now. And honestly, I had to do the math of if I last breath one of his creatures, or if I last breath my own Mutavault, does that equal the same amount of damage, net damage to me?
Right.
And I would love to tell you I'm fast enough to do that in 2 seconds, but I wasn't. Right. So, yeah. So, you know, you run into it on both sides, right? You just got to be stoic, if you will, Cameron.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
can I also just mention one other thing of kind of like the highlight of my night?
Sure.
So there's like 33 people playing standard on Friday. And there is one girl who's probably in third grade, and she's playing Magic, playing Standard. That's awesome, right?
No, I thought this was going to go the other way. He says, highlight of my night, and says, there's this one girl, and I'm expecting something great. And then it's like third grade. It's like, there's that.
It's just hilarious because here she is. Like, it's just so unassuming. You think, oh, third grade girl, I'm going to take it easy on her. So I'm sitting across from some other dude, but catty corner to me is this girl in this, like, 30-year-old guy playing Magic together. And it's just funny to see the dichotomy of that. And I think he was like kind of taking it easy on her for that first round. And I'm just like sitting there out of the corner of my eye, and she just lays down like 9 points of damage in one turn and just obliterates this guy.
Basically curb stomps him and knocks all his teeth out, right?
Exactly.
Nice.
And there's just something really strange about seeing a guy who's getting obliterated by a third-grade girl, and he kind of looks up and is like, I hope nobody's watching, but everybody's watching. it was just so entertaining. It was definitely the highlight. Kudos to that third-grade girl for, like, you know, going out there and playing.
I've noticed a lot of younger kids that have been playing lately, and some of them are just fantastic at this game.
Oh, they're so good.
It's kind of scary. Yeah.
And honestly, here's my recommendation. I did this at the M14. If you're at a pre-release and you play against a little kid, right, and you're in the last round or two, take your leftover commons and uncommons that you're never going to see or never going to care about and just give them to the kid, right?
Sure.
That depends on how badly he beats you.
Fair enough. But it just does so much more for the game if you are, you know, I should say giving to those kinds of kids, right?
Yeah.
Whereas if you're just a total jerk, and we've all seen that happen too, right?
Yeah, right.
It's much more damaging to the game at large. So anyway, Cameron, do you have anything else to add from FNM?
Nope. It was just a good night.
I really don't have anything to add either. I mean, I played.
You went 3-1 and got no prize money.
Yeah, I had one loss, and I didn't make to top 4, top 8, or whatever they did because of tiebreakers, so that was cool.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was a good night. I feel like I played okay, but there's not much interesting to report, and we have, everything happened this week. Everything, right?
Everything.
So we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about, what we call it counterfeit gate? Chinese print gate? Something gate. Okay, we'll be right back. And here we are talking about the new card frame and kind of the counterfeit discussion that occurred afterwards. So let me lay this out. There was an article on Daily MTG, and they showed off the new card frame, which I don't know that we really want to actually talk about the P's and Q's of the card frame. It's a evolution of the design that was previously there. Mm-hmm. No, they didn't show artifacts, so we don't know if they're going to do the right thing and change
the beautiful
the artifact
silver.
Frame.
Yes.
I hate you, Cameron.
But regardless of all that, kind of the interesting thing is this holofoil egg that's at the bottom center of, I believe, every rare and mythic rare.
Now,
I don't know if it's on all foils as well.
Okay, well, but I've got a question on this point. When it's on rares and mythic rares, right?
Right.
But there is many a times down the road that you'll have a random uncommon that is worth money. Right? So, I don't know why they didn't just put it on all the cards. It's probably, you know, a cost thing. I have no idea. But it's
just
weird.
I don't know really either. And obviously, we just see it from a picture. So, it's really difficult for us to know.
Right.
Now, the other thing that's really interesting is they do point out that the bottom, the numerical value, or not numerical value, but the collector's number of the card is machine readable on all the cards. You can use some kind of card reader or something like that. So that opens up a lot of possibilities for, like, registering sealed decks and all these other things. Maybe that can be done electronically, which would be super cool. But, you know, more importantly is this counterfeiting issue. Now, Dustin, you're obviously much more in the thick of this thing because you deal cards, right? And so, you know, you have a much more of your value in your day-to-day life tied up in kind of the value of cards. What do you see this doing?
Well, let's stop for a moment and...
Oh, I forgot to reference the Reddit thing, didn't I? Sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying that this is not a new thing. Counterfeit cards have been around for years, okay? It's just, I guess, been brought to our attention more, right?
Right. And I should follow up that. So immediately after the holofoil stamp thing, there was a post floating around on Reddit where a guy did some close-ups of some Modern Master cards and some older cards. And the counterfeits are quite good. Obviously, we can't touch the card, so we don't know the feel, but obviously they're very accurate, and it makes you wonder, you know, to what degree is this a problem that Wizards is putting a holofoil stamp on their rares and mythic rares. So, sorry, I forgot to set it all the way up.
It's all
so,
good.
Dustin.
The things that I find weird is, sure, in Modern Masters card they showed was Tarmogoyf. That, to me, makes sense for something that somebody would counterfeit. It's so expensive. But other ones they were showing was, like, Domri Raid, which I wouldn't expect that many cards in Standard to be something they would counterfeit, but I guess, you know, if the margin's there, they would.
Right.
That being said, the minimalistic portions that they showed of the cards to compare, in everyday, like playing a game or something, you wouldn't notice. I mean, it was scary how good these things were, right?
Yeah.
And the other thing with that too is, especially when you're doing a lot of trades, you're not going to take every single card you have and try to put it right next to another one and like verify everything. I mean, there's times when I do trades that are, you know, 100, 200 cards at once. And if I'm checking every single card, I mean, what am I going to do? Be there for 6 hours with one guy trading? It's kind of ridiculous, but I don't know, man. It's like, do you just stay away from certain cards? Do you only stick with foils now? I don't know where you would go.
That is an important point that we should make, is that obviously if you're looking to invest in cards post-foil, you know, in being introduced to Magic, you probably want to buy the foil version if you're not willing to go through some kind of counterfeiting, you know, checks, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, Cameron, you're the one that's kind of looking down the barrel of potentially buying into Modern or Legacy, and are you going to, like, worry about if a card's counterfeit? Or, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
are you just
yeah.
getting the cards to get the cards? You see what I mean?
It totally depends, right? If it's from, like, my local Magic shop, even if it's counterfeit, I guess, I'm still going to trust the Magic shop, right? If they're coming from Dustin, I'm not going to trust a single thing I get.
So mean.
No, just totally kidding. So
Cameron, let me throw this at you. In the article, they said that some of these counterfeits showed up in North Carolina. So it's not like we're only seeing this overseas or in you know, a lot of the big cities like LA or New York or anything like that. It's, you know, little places. So, I mean,
gosh,
just because you're in
Iowa,
like, doesn't
mean
you're
immune. Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's a virus, right? I mean, like, one person selling all these counterfeits sends them all across the U.S., all across South America, Europe, wherever.
Right.
And those are going to get traded, and you know, before you know it, they're probably infiltrating everywhere, and that sucks.
Right. Well, not to mention that they could be selling them on eBay, too. Any of that stuff. It's not
totally.
Just in trades.
And Dustin and I actually reflected back on this. Like, one time I was helping him, you know, trade and work at a event, and we had a very we both had the wrong feeling about this guy, right? We just had the wrong feeling about the way the cards felt and all that stuff. But, you know, 99% of the time, you know, everybody seems on the level. And when you're trading with them, you know, they might be on the level. They just don't know that their card is counterfeit.
Right. Because they could have got it from, you know, five people ago.
Yeah.
Right. And here's the scary thing for me. Number one, I hate the idea of it impacting play. I hate the idea of me playing Legacy and all of a sudden my opponent goes, Judge, can you check his underground sea?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And secondly, like, these little font problems that you see in the Reddit post, granted, like I said, we're not up close and personal. We're just judging this based upon the photographs. A lot of those touches, if someone's competent enough, can fix those things. And the only real way to be able to tell would be to check the printing process, because the way you printed things in 1993 are not the way you print things in 2013, right? Or 2014.
Right.
So the other thing that I would like to say is this is exactly where we are headed with the reserve list policy and how intense and how incorrect Watsi has been on this, okay?
Well, hang on here. The thing that we're looking at, though, is not all the cards that are being counterfeit are things that are on the no reprint list, right?
I understand that, but all the things that are modern legal, they can just feasibly reprint Modern Masters 2 and have those as holofoil. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's a problem that's a lot more limited when you're talking about modern cards. Mm-hmm. What's an Underground Sea Mint worth right now, Dustin?
A revised one? Star City's got, I want to say, 200.
So if you could counterfeit things, right. I think you probably want to go with old duels. And here's what I'm trying to say. And you know, Dustin and I got into a pretty good conversation with a buddy of ours who is a Magic collector. And this guy really believes in the reserve list. He really believes that it's going to protect the value of his collection.
Well, he's also got a collection that's very valuable compared to most.
Right. And the bottom line is, in my opinion, the reserve list is not going to protect anyone. If these counterfeitings are going to get good enough, and they will, the price of Legacy cards are going to go down.
Right.
Right. And I think we're going to reach a point where it's going to be a don't ask, don't tell situation whenever you play against a guy and you think maybe that's a counterfeit on ground C, you're not going to want to say anything, right?
Right.
You just want to play the game. And so...
Well, I don't know. So you talk about counterfeiting as it only affects high-end cards. But I would think that if you were a counterfeiter and you wanted to get away with it, you wouldn't do all the $100, $200 cards. You would counterfeit like all the $30 cards. And who's going to question that? I'm not going to go around and check people's, you know, $20, $30 cards and worry about it.
Yeah, I'm not. I honestly, whether people get away with it or not has nothing to do with me.
So you're just
what I am
about
saying.
The availability? Or, I mean.
Yeah, what I'm saying is the market will crash if this continues, and it continues to be a thing.
Right.
Period. End of story. Because there's not. Once these guys get competent enough, the only way to tell a real underground C from a fake one is to use a jeweler's loop. That's it.
Right.
Right. And what's that going to do to the prices of these things, man?
Well, if everybody has them, they won't have to buy them anymore.
Exactly. And my point is, Wizards owns this product. It is theirs. Time to man up, abolish the reserve list, and give us a box set so you cut the piracy off where it is. And that you make the money and take control of your product. This is exactly, it's Napster and iTunes in a completely different skin. It is exactly that. I just, drives me crazy. And I hate the idea of Cameron going out and spending $200 on Wastelands and that the value collapses because Wizards doesn't feel like, well, Wastelands aren't on the reserve list. But you get the idea.
Sure.
It's just like no other company in the world would let so many other people control their game to this extent. It's just insane to me. Anyway, sorry, so, stepping off my soapbox.
So I was thinking about this too, and like you said, I mean, there's not a whole lot of ways around it. It's like if they wanted to stop it dead, they could set up some sort of program where they'll print new cards, they'll have like the little holofoil thing on them, you send in old ones, and they replace them or something, right? Now, yes, there's so many cards out there that would cost millions of dollars for Hasbro to do this. But they could also do something like, if you send in so many, charge you a small fee, but that way at least you know what you have or your collection is legit cards, right? But like you were saying, with the old stuff, it's a collector's value, right? I mean, Moxes and stuff like that, it doesn't matter if you have legit ones for tournament because you're very rarely at a vintage tournament, right?
Right.
So it's just a really difficult situation to deal with and, you know, the financial spec of it.
If I'm WotC, because look, it's not just Legacy that drives the price of Duel Lands. It's Commander, it's Cube, it's all these other things. If I'm WotC, you have to sit and think, look, these counterfeiters are going to make hundreds of dollars a pop on these. And I can make a box set of foils of 10 Duel Lands. What could they charge for them? And have people like me buy them.
Right.
I mean, honestly.
Okay, right? so let me ask you this, because you keep targeting dual lands as a big problem, but what about the smaller stuff that we've seen, like Domri Raid? You know,
I think that a lot of that's going to get solved with the holofoil stamp, right? Because Standard just rotates,
right?
Yeah.
Well, it's not a matter of new cards forward. It's about, you know, 20 years worth of cards already out there. Right?
Right.
I mean, Domri Raid and stuff eventually could get played modern this. So, I mean, there's still a lot of use out of these cards that are rotating out.
Right. But again, I think at some point you're looking at a window of time where those cards aren't necessarily going to have that value.
Right.
Again.
Or something better comes out and replaces them, right?
Something better comes out and replaces them. That's not to say that that's still not a problem. I mean, I just hate to sound so nihilistic about it, but I view the counterfeiting as WotC's problem, not my problem. Okay.
Fair enough.
I just hate the idea of them having horrible business practices that's cut people off from playing their game.
Right.
That's what I hate.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, sorry. This has gone like way long round of Ben. Any other thoughts on the frame?
Nothing on the frame. I did find it, actually, yeah, I guess I did find it a little odd that, you know, the little bottom portion that you said could be read by card readers and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's slightly different for foils than it is for non-foils.
Weird.
They said between the collector's number and, I don't know, there's like a little dot between the collector's number and something else, like the artist name or something like that. And on foils, it'll be a star instead of a dot.
Hmm.
And I just thought that was really weird that they would change that, because it seems like it would take a lot longer to print them or something. I don't know. It just seems like a different process would.
Well, here's hoping that WotC does the right thing and makes the artifacts not Chrome. That's just.
Right. So,
I mean, I'd enemy number one right there. Go ahead, Dustin.
One last thing. Aside from the playability portion, and you did talk about this a little bit, counterfeiting, how it would affect not only collectors, you know, because, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that have very large vintage collections sitting in houses, you know, but also, if this persists, how is this going to affect shops? I mean, most big cities have, you know, between 10 to 20 shops minimum, right? And I mean, how many of those would end up going out of business in 4 or 5 years if no one needs to buy cards from them anymore? They can't survive on F&M alone.
Yeah, that's tough for me to say, because I'd have to see a store's books to know where the profits are. I mean, obviously they make money on singles. I know that. But like, you know, the shop we were at the other night, they're also a sporting memorabilia store.
Right, but not all shops are that. A lot of shops are strictly hobby shops, right?
Right, and Cameron, I mean, I don't know how much other games tie into, like, you know, you... play cards at Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory.
Sure.
So I don't know what other things happen.
Oh, there's Pokemon, Yu-Gi-Oh, Warhammer. I mean, you name it. Every night there's something going on. It's great.
Right. Jeez.
Well, anyway, let's also, just real quick, the other big news from the mothership was the modern event deck. Ugh. So it's a full-on modern deck. 75 cards, $75. It's $1 a card. That's me using
But how much of that is sweet, land, basic land?
Sweet math skills. And I was telling Cameron before we went on air, Dustin, what do you think the odds are, over and under, that it's merfolk? You know, Cameron's going to go through all this effort.
Okay, so first off, typically when an event deck comes out, it's two at once, right? But being an older event, saying that they can't release 4 or 6 at once, right? I mean, they can give you like a Drudge, a Fairies, a Merfolk, so on. But no, I see what you're saying. If Cameron's Merfolk deck just goes poof, $75, that's hilarious.
So what's going to happen,
so
man?
So sad.
No, my theory is it includes a fetch land. That's why it's costing that much, and that's going to be their way of introducing fetch lands back into kind of the mix.
Okay, that's wishful thinking, dude. Yeah.
Personally, I think you are way wrong. The reason for this, okay, so this is what I'm looking at with the modern event deck. One, it says modern event deck. It does not say modern masters event deck. So they could reprint more cards that were not in modern masters, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a theme deck. The other thing with that is, if you look at a lot of playable cards in these decks, you have a lot of cards that are $10, $12, so on and so on. And out of 75 cards, that would add up quick. So they're charging $75. Right? I don't think it's going to be like, oh, this one has a Tarmogoyf because we need more of those out there, or a Dark Confidant, right? It's going to be a multitude of things that are $7, $8.
All right, so let's do this. Let's prop bet this thing on the air.
Yes. All right.
Fetchland is in it. You buy me, winner buys the other one a barbecue dinner.
Oh, well, hang on. Now, when you say Fetchland, Onslaught or Zendikar?
When's it coming out?
I don't know. I mean, are you saying that they would reprint stuff that is not currently in Modern to throw it in Modern?
No, I think there will be a currently Modern fetch.
So, okay, so you're saying everything will be currently Modern as is?
Yes.
Barbecue dinner. Where? Where? Because I don't want to like have to like go to this like $80 barbecue place.
I don't know how convinced you are of this, Dustin.
Okay, so
right now you're thinking, what is Curtis Red? What is Curtis Red?
No. How about this? The loser picks the barbecue place.
Okay.
Because they're the one
that's
pick.
Fair.
Then yes.
That's fair.
Bet is on. There will not be a fetch land in the event deck.
All right, Cameron, you are witness, my friend.
Yeah. I'm siding with Dustin.
Do you want to know why?
Why?
When they reprinted Modern Masters, it did not include anything from Zendikar. It was all older than that.
All right. Dude, you can have whatever reasons. I think that's why it's going to be $75.
That's fine. And I hope you pick Oklahoma Joe's when you lose.
I hope I pick Oklahoma Joe's. All right. So any other thoughts on the modern event deck before we kind of jump
into
spoilers?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. This is my problem with this. And we just got done talking about counterfeiting and collections and more of the stuff just zoning out there, right? This is almost the same thing, but with legitimate cards, right? I was kind of unhappy with Modern Masters. The whole point of them reprinting all this modern stuff was to get more people playing modern, right?
Right.
I would say that has failed. But their idea is apparently, let's put out even more of these cards. And is it really a point of accessibility? You know, I mean, are people looking at modern saying it's just too expensive still? Because a lot of the cards that people thought were too expensive aren't that bad now.
Here's what I wonder. Because in his article where they talk about the card frames, Aaron Forsythe says modern events have doubled or tripled or something in terms of registered sanctioned events.
In like what, Thailand?
That's just it. I wonder how much of it is just our city is just so not modern centric. And we felt this whenever we had so we're in Kansas City. We had a modern Grand Prix and just the apathy towards the format for a Grand Prix that was in our city was really noticeable. It really was.
Okay. Let me ask you this. You told me that Grand Prix Prague has just ended and it was modern, correct?
Mm-hmm.
What was the attendance? How many people played?
I have no idea. And I'm not necessarily disagreeing with you, but I'm just saying that Wizards views modern differently than you and I do.
Right.
I think there's problems with the banned and restricted list in modern, and that makes it not necessarily the most fun to play. But we just don't have modern tournaments fire here at all.
Right.
You know, it's such a standard place where, Cameron, you guys have modern once a month, right?
Once a month, yeah.
So it's not nearly the failure for you. I mean, not you personally. You didn't fail modern, Cameron.
Modern has failed him.
Yes, exactly. Yes.
I mean, just be honest with me, Cameron. To you, are modern legacy like equal in your brain as things that you want to like reach, or is legacy more the goal? You know what I mean? Like, because
right
in my
now,
mind, there's definitely.
Yeah, they're equal to play. That's what it comes down to. Both look really, really interesting. One looks just totally insane with what you can do with it. Legacy. The other one's modern, seems a little bit more approachable. And I think a good gateway drug to legacy. I'll put it that way.
Okay. No, that's fair. So, Dustin, but you and I see modern as not doing that well in our city.
Correct. Well, I'm trying to find out how many players were here. I keep seeing things where they're saying how many they expected and all this other stuff, but I can't find anything on the fly of how many were there. Because I see a lot of these standard Grand Prix, and we're looking at, you know, averaging between like 16 to 1,800 people, right? I want to know how that compares to the modern ones.
Well, you know, I don't know if all three of us, but definitely a few of us are going to be at the modern Grand Prix in Minneapolis. So we'll definitely kind of get an impression about the format there, but I do think $75 is a bit much for an event deck. Like,
I agree.
Really?
But again, it all depends on what's in it. I mean, if you look at the stuff that was not reprinted in Modern Masters, like Wiltleaf.
Wiltleaf Liege?
Yeah, he's like $16 now. He used to be like a dollar or two. Again, I don't know if the event deck's going to be only Modern Masters stuff that gets thrown in this, or it's just all modern stuff. To me, it would make more sense for it to be all modern stuff. So it would be stuff that was not already reprinted.
You know what would be sweet? Is if it was one of the World Championship modern decks. That would be awesome.
That would be cool. Yeah.
You know what the problem is? For it to be a good event playable deck, which they're supposed to be, that means stuff like Path to Exile will have even more printings.
Or it would need a Misty Rainforest, maybe? Maybe it would need that.
Maybe, but there's been a lot of clear cutting, Curtis.
So anyway, let's take a break. I want to come back and talk about standard and spoilers for Born of the Gods. All right, so let's talk Born of the Gods. We got some spoilers this weekend. Big promo cards. They were, of course, translated, so you know the names might be incorrect.
So these are the pre-release cards?
That appears to be the case, and I believe if it's like Theros, you can play with them, right? Or was it Ravnica Block? You could play with the promo cards.
I don't remember if Theros you could. I was not.
They always switch that around on me. But anyway, Cameron, why don't you start us off here, man? Is there any that really jump out at you that you'd like to talk about?
First off, Temple of Enlightenment is finally here. A blue white.
That's been spoiled for like over a month.
I know, but just seeing it, it just makes me so happy. I'm really happy about that.
It does make me wonder, and there has been some debate with a few people I've talked about there only being three of the temples spoiled. Is there going to be three in this set and two in the last? Because that would be really annoying.
I think it's all five.
That's what I was thinking, too, and they just don't know the names of them yet. That's what I was expecting, but
I'm willing to bet that, yeah.
I sure hope
it's not. When it's a blue-white land, it just feels right to Scry, doesn't it? It feels like that's what God intended. Anyway, Cameron, any of these other cards jumping out at you?
What is it? Mediator of the Ideal? Was kind of an interesting card. So it's a 4 blue creature sphinx, 4/5 flying, and it has this text called Inspiration. Whenever Mediator of the Ideal becomes untapped, reveal the card from your library. If it's an artifact, creature, or land card, you may put it onto the battlefield with Manifestation counter on it, which I don't know which that means. It is an enchantment in addition to other types.
Well, I think the counter just indicates that it's an enchantment.
Yes, okay. it has been manifested into an enchantment as well.
Okay. So this is kind of interesting. I don't know if I see this making like a huge thing with like devotion decks or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of an interesting card that I might want to play with in a blue-white deck.
Oh, well, first of all, let's get this out of the way. In limited... Bonkers.
End of everything, right?
free creatures and lands. Don't mind if
artifacts.
I do. Yeah. Dustin, any of them jump out at you?
Well, first off, on the blue one he was talking about, I think its ability is very powerful. But its cost is a little high. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. Blue-white control can take as long as it wants till it gets there. But I wish it was a little bit cheaper, right?
Right.
Let's see here. I'm just not really impressed by many of these, right? Especially the new dragon to me is like the worst, right? I'm sick of every set having the new dragon, and this one here, it's like it's not so much worse than some other ones that have been out. It's just useless, right? Unless it's like limited, right?
Yeah, again, it's got the dragon syndrome. I'm coining this dragon syndrome. Amazing and limited, amazing and sealed, terrible in constructed magic.
Right. And then the green one, which could have been the best one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is 4 colorless, 2 green for a 6/6 Hydra. It has tribute 6. When it enters the battlefield, an opponent of your choice can put 6/1/1 counters on it. And then when it enters the battlefield, if its tribute wasn't paid, you can have it fight another target creature. The problem is, no one's going to give you the 6 counters ever. And you're paying 6 for a 6/6 that has fight, which isn't like horrible, but it's not value either.
Well, here's the thing. They're gonna pay the tribute if they got a Doomblade, right? Like, whatever.
I guess they could, right? But it just seems very few.
The constructed feeling of that card is that it has no trample, right?
Well, I'm just thinking, why would you play with that card when you just use, like, Polychronos or something? Right?
Yeah, and that's it. All of these kind of have that same feel, where they are limited bombs, but not much of anything else. Obviously the lands are going to make a huge impact. I think we talked about the Planeswalker a couple weeks ago. I do want to mention this other card that I think is by far the strongest of all of them, called Nefarious Burn. It is a 1 red instant, and it deals 5 damage to target creature or planeswalker, not player, if it is your turn, scry 2. So first of all, I'm super glad that this doesn't say player.
Yeah.
Because what a nightmare. but, you know, this is the exact kind of card I hate. However, it's going to be very good at blowing up Jace's. Which does matter.
Yeah.
Right. Jace is such a player in the metagame right now, and he is fantastic against red strategies. I mean, even just, it's amazing how much damage you save when you're +1ing Jace.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And their ability to hit him with this is a big deal.
Well, the other thing that I'm looking at with that card is it's an instant, but if you want to play it on your turn, you get the bonus of the scry too, right?
Yes, and scry in red is super good, right? I think Magma Jet is incredibly strong because it helps you,
right,
you know, kind of stop you from running out of gas and ripping mountains off the top and this kind of thing.
Not to mention the fact that in red, most things are played very quickly, so you will have the extra mana to wait till your turn. And since it's Planeswalker, they can hold priority, and they'll get their Planeswalker ability regardless, so you don't have to kill it on their turn. It's not such a priority, right?
Right. So I think that's the strongest of all these things.
So far, yes. But that one's not a promo, right?
No, it's just, I think it might be the Bio Box.
Okay, so it's a different version or a different type of promo.
So do
Again,
you know,
that's a might.
So do you know, is this going to have the same sort of mechanic as Gatecrash for the pre-release where you choose like a color? Like Theros, I guess. Is it going to have something like that? Have we heard yet?
I'm sure it will, and I'll hate every solitary second of it.
Yeah.
I know just, they're doing more of the like fight the Hydra type stuff.
Can I just get six packs? Is that really too much to ask?
Yeah, no, please. You can have five and a pre-pack.
All right, Cameron, you ready to become a Spike?
Yeah, man.
Every week, we like to give Cameron an older format card, have him read said card, and evaluate it for us through the lens of a noob. So, Cameron, what's your card this week?
Well, we have to like kind of preface this with like, apparently listeners are getting a kick now out of you and your masochistic tendencies, sadomasochistic, I guess. I don't know. So it's Bazaar of Baghdad, which wasn't too painful. It wasn't like a couple of other cards, but
the price is painful.
Here's what happened. I took a request. So I think his name's John, right? One of our listeners. Yeah. Hit me up via Twitter, and he's like, dude, I really want you to do Bazaar Baghdad. I was like, you know what? Request granted, my friend.
Okay. So hang on here. Cameron, the worst part of this card is a near mint one is $350.
Wow.
Now continue.
Okay, go ahead. Read away.
Yeah, Bazaar of Baghdad. It is a land card. Tap to take two cards from your library, after which you must immediately discard three from your hand to your graveyard. You don't have three or more cards in your hand, discard your whole hand. No spells may be cast between drawing and discarding cards.
So, by the way, I just want to do this, right? Okay, go ahead. Give me your evaluation, and then we'll talk about the Oracle text. Go ahead.
Yeah, so it's reusable, non-counterable draw engine, right? This card is something that you'd probably want in a dredge deck, from what I can tell. Pay zero mana, draw two cards, and put possibly three cards that I want in my graveyard. I can get some really serious card advantage that way. I can create game-winning combos that way, and create some answers to solutions that may be on the battlefield right then.
So I want you to click the link in the chat. That is the Oracle text. Have you looked at the Oracle text?
Tap, draw two cards, then discard three cards.
I love it.
Yes.
Yeah, I love
and then all the rest of the original text box just became a ruling on 10-4 of 2004. It doesn't count. It's just a ruling now.
Yeah. That's awesome. But, you know, so there's certain things in there that are kind of interesting. Like, if I read the Oracle text, draw two cards, then discard three cards, could I play an instant spell within that? You know, I mean, having the giant paragraph of text is helpful.
Well, it lets you know, right?
Well, just as an FYI, this is banned in Legacy. It's, like, too good in Dredge.
Wow,
So it is a vintage-only card. But if you ever see vintage Dredge operate, we'll just say it's a frightening and powerful thing.
No kidding.
Dustin, how many times have you run into Bazaar of Baghdad in your travels?
Trade-wise? I see him maybe 3 times a year. Not too often.
Are you more likely to enter a bazaar in Baghdad than to see a Bazaar of Baghdad?
Currently, with my American passport, I'm not going anywhere near Baghdad.
Okay.
So I'll stick with the ones in trade books. Thank you.
Dustin's actually banned from the Middle East as a whole. That's a topic for a different show. So
I think I can handle
Dustin,
that.
If someone, a listener out there, would like to chat with you, what could they do?
They can plan to go to the Star City event in St. Louis in February, right?
Yeah, we will be there.
Yeah, totally.
Cameron, if someone wants to hit you up,
they can contact me, or I can act as Dustin at Cameron _McCoy.
You might make some people mad if you act like me.
Yeah, that's true.
And I will happily accept Cameron becomes a Spike request at Curtis Now. We are the Spike Feed. We will check you guys next week.